Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast is number 1160. The topic is training and the title is Using Pre-Exhaust to Change Exercise Focus. Now, we've talked about pre-exhaust method before in regards to kind of like bodybuilding effects and ways in which you can kind of hyper-focus on specific areas. We even had a podcast back, number 254, which talked about pre-exhaust as a way to lessen the stress on connective tissues in training. So it can actually help you have less joint pain. So the title of that, if you want to learn more about that specifically, it's podcast number 254. So you can Google Brutal Iron Gym Podcast 254, pre-exhaust for big gains without big pains. Another one we did was podcast 334. So you can hear these are like 800, 900 podcasts ago, which is why I figured it'd be good to kind of retouch on this topic. But we did podcast 334. We talked about priming versus pre-exhaust. And that one's a little more detailed, so I'll let you listen to that. But it refers to doing a smaller movement before a bigger movement, which I'm going to explain in a lot more detail in today's podcast. But we do a smaller movement sometimes before a bigger movement. Sometimes we'll do it just so we can feel the muscles of the smaller movement in the bigger movement. Let's say, for example, I'm doing chest flies before I do chest press. Well, if I do chest flies first, I am isolating into my chest muscles. It doesn't use my triceps, doesn't use my front shoulders if I do it correctly. It should really just use my chest. Then when I go to bench press, I can better feel my chest. Another example could be doing hamstring curls before squats or deadlifts. Hamstring curls before deadlifts is a great way to then feel your hamstrings during deadlifts. Now, if you do it to a instead of going like full all the way to failure, you just kind of do it to get a pump and kind of like a light burn in the muscle, but you don't damage it. That's called priming, meaning you're kind of waking up your mind-muscle connection for that muscle. If you beat the crap out of the muscle and you take it to failure, that's called pre-exhaust. And that's actually what we're going to talk about in today's podcast. So if you want to learn more about priming, that is podcast number 334, titled Priming versus Pre-Exhaust. So you can check that out. Now, with today's podcast, the reason why this came up was I actually just got done training a client. And we started, she had a gastric kind of a surgery to where it would help her eat less. And it helps her lose weight. When we first met, she was extreme caloric restriction due to the surgery. But she wanted to lift weights and work on getting stronger because she always felt kind of weak. She knew her posture was bad. She associated that was due to weakness. She used to be a high school athlete, so she was aware that strength was playing a part of what she didn't like about her aesthetics. And she knew that, okay, if I'm eating not a lot of food, I might lose muscle. Maybe if I lift weights and do things to maintain muscle or gain strength, maybe that'll help me in the long run. She was absolutely right. So it's awesome for her to recognize that. But when we first started working together, she was in a caloric deficit severely all the time. Meaning that why that was important for us to know was if we trained too intensely, we would actually, it would be more detrimental to her fat loss progress. Her body was already under stress from being constantly underfed. So if we would have damaged muscle tissue, there would have been nothing to repair it with. If we would have used too many calories in training, it would have just furthered the stress state of her body, and her body would not have lost the body fat. So we had to be very careful when we first started training that if we want to do something, that it has the most benefits in it to make it worth the risk of possibly burning too many calories or causing too much damage. So when we first started, we actually started with really big movements. Movements that used as many muscles as possible. One of those would be a trap bar deadlift. If you don't know what a trap bar is, that's okay. Just think of it as a deadlift. So it's a deadlift with a fancy bar. You can pause the podcast and YouTube that if you want to. But it's a bar that you actually kind of stand inside of, which sounds weird, but it's like a hexagon shape and you stand inside of it and then the weight's kind of put on the sides of you. But basically what that did is it's a deadlift that's low back friendly. So since she had a sport background, she did have some decent strength in her low back, but she didn't have a lot of strength in her abs and she didn't have a lot of strength in her hamstrings and glutes. So we wanted to reduce some of the potential injury risks of regular deadlifts, but we wanted a deadlift because of how applicable that was to everyday movement, plus that it trained pretty much every freaking muscle of the body. Now, you could argue a bunch of them, but it's a really good exercise to train a lot of muscles. Let's just say it that way. So we did trap bar deadlifts. We also learned like Bulgarian split squats, which is almost like a single leg lunge. And how can you lunge with both legs? Fair question. But it's a lunge position, but you actually squat up and down in that position rather than kind of bringing your foot forward or backward. The feet kind of stay in place. So it's almost like a split squat, like a lunge position, but you're squatting. And then we also did walking lunges. Now, there were a bunch of things in here, but in general, what we did was we did global movements, movements that used a lot of muscles, a lot of joints. We tried to get as much bang for our buck as possible. But now that she's past the surgery stage, I'm in control of her nutrition now, and we're starting to refeed her calories to bring her metabolism back up, help it burn even more body fat, help build beautiful muscles, help get stronger. So we're eating a lot more food now. We're doing it in stages so her body can adapt and kind of adjust along the way. So we're doing it properly. But it's allowing us more freedom in our training that we can start to kind of play with new concepts and new movements. One of the things we did today was we learned isolation exercises. So I taught her how to do the leg extension, the leg curl. We have a seated leg curl and a lying leg curl. I taught her the seated leg curl today. And then we also did a machine by Nautilus. It's called a glute drive. It's a hip thrust. It's a hip thrust machine. So rather than having the barbell across your hips and having to put your upper back on like a bench, this machine kind of does it in a nice, more way more comfortable way. So we learned a quadricep isolation, we learned a hamstring isolation, we learned a glute isolation. I told her what was neat about this is it opens up the ability for us to change the focus of our larger movements. Meaning we learned some basic large movements, but we're not stuck with only those. Actually, for each of those, we now are going to learn variations to allow us a lot more variety of training to force body adaptations. But we don't have to have more equipment. We don't have to learn new movements. We can actually just kind of change the order of our movements, and that changes the focal points of the bigger movements. So, for example, a Bulgarian split squat, where that targets is actually a little bit different on everybody depending on where they're weak. A lot of people, it's going to kind of hit the quadricep muscles down by the knee, and it might work their glute muscles kind of holding the hip. Now, that depends a little bit on everybody. I've had somebody who said that they felt nothing in their quads, and it was all in their hips. I've had other people say, you know, it was just all the muscle right around their knees, and that was the, you know, super hard challenge there. So Bulgarian split squats can kind of help find your weaknesses, meaning that since it's a multi-joint movement, you're using your ankle, knee, and hip all in kind of like one motion, it's going to help kind of isolate anything that's weak along that chain. Now, the fun part is we can actually change what we want the focus to be. So let's say we want to focus more on glutes because that's going to help protect her lower back. Well, what we could do then is we would do hamstring isolation and glute isolation movements before we did the Bulgarian split squat. What that does is it tires out the hamstrings and glutes. So by the time you go to the Bulgarian split squats, the limiter of that movement will be the hamstrings and glutes. So it won't work her quads most. She won't feel it mostly there. She's going to feel it mostly in her hamstrings and glutes because her hamstrings and glutes are already pre-exhausted. They're already tired. So they're coming into that movement being the known and purposefully intended weak link. So the Bulgarian split squats will reach failure because the hamstrings and glutes reach failure, not because the quadriceps do. However, let's say that we want to work on quadriceps, and this purpose might be, okay, we have a real thick musculature at the upper part of our thigh, but we don't have any muscle around our knee, so the leg kind of looks like an upside-down cone, and we would like to kind of get a little more kind of like muscle right above the knee because it looks like a more athletic build. Well, if we do leg extensions before we do Bulgarian split squats, it now makes the quadriceps the weak link. So Bulgarian split squats will now fail because the quadriceps failed. So by changing the movement we do before the bigger movement, we can change the focus of the bigger movement. So I can pre-exhaust my quadriceps using leg extensions to make my quadriceps the main focus of Bulgarian split squats, or I can pre-exhaust my hamstrings and glutes by using hamstring curls and you know, glute drive, the hip thrust movement, to make my glutes and hamstrings the limiting movement, the limiting muscles for a Bulgarian split squat. So the Bulgarian split squat, we don't have to learn anything different about it. We don't have to learn a different movement. We don't have to find more equipment. We can just simply change what we do before the Bulgarian split squat to get something different from the Bulgarian split squat. So we might have one unit of 4 weeks where we focus on the glutes. So we do a lot of hamstrings and glute isolations before we do Bulgarian split squat. Then maybe the next 4 weeks we want to work on that quadricep growth down by the knee. So we keep the Bulgarian split squat, but we do leg extensions before it now. And that will change it and make it feel different. So it's pretty cool that what you do before a compound movement, a movement that uses multiple joints, multiple muscles, what you do before that movement can change the focus of that movement. Very neat things. I have another client one time, they were saying that they wanted to build a bigger chest, and they had heard that, you know, chest presses would be best for chest, but they never felt their chest during chest presses, whether it was a barbell or dumbbells, they just always felt their triceps. So we did chest flies, chest isolation, before we did the presses. What that did was that stimulated and beat up the chest muscle separate from the triceps. So the chest muscle was beat up, worn up, and kind of like already damaged, already fatigued. So then when we went into presses, they couldn't press any further than what their chest could do. So even if their triceps would typically try to take over, they couldn't because the chest was so damn tired, all they could feel was their chest. So they previously could never feel their chest and had trouble getting it to grow. By doing chest flies before we do chest presses, of any variation either way, it allowed us to get more chest growth rather than that stimulus being stolen by the triceps. Another example that we do commonly is we do lateral raises for the shoulders before we do overhead presses. A lot of people in overhead presses, they either wear out or reach failure because the triceps wear out, or they're just stabilizing and their positioning kind of wears out. So they have trouble holding their position, or their triceps die. And what happens then is it limits the shoulder development that could be possible through overhead presses because the shoulders aren't the limiting factor, the triceps or the positioning is the limiting factor. So whatever's the limiting factor gets worked the most. Everything else can only get worked as much as the limiting factor can. So we want the limiting factor of any exercise to be the targeted muscle, the muscle that we want to get from that exercise. So if I do lateral raises for my shoulders that don't pre-exhaust my position or don't pre-exhaust my triceps, just my shoulders, then when I go into overhead presses, my shoulders will be the limiting factor. They'll be beat up already. They will be weaker than the triceps. They will be weaker than my ability to hold my position. So therefore, I'm going to get more shoulder development out of overhead presses by doing the isolation of shoulders beforehand. Another example is just doing hip thrusts before squats. So if a male or female wants to get more glute development from squats, do a whole bunch of hip thrusts, glute bridges, things like that. Anything that's isolated into the glutes, do that before you go squat. And then you're going to find that you get more glute development from your squats. Now, you can work on improving technique of all these movements to try to isolate singular muscles, and I encourage you to do that. But even during that process, or even without really knowing how to change your technique of movements, simply changing what you do before those movements helps them become more active, more proactive, more beneficial towards the targeted goal. So you can do kind of like the isolation movement. You can do the first movement either entirely before the second movement. So for example, I might have a client do, we might do 3 to 6 really hard, challenging, fatiguing sets of chest flies before we ever do the chest press. Or you can do the first movement paired with the second movement. And that could be an example of a client maybe doing the glute drive or like a hip thrust variation exercise and then go right into squats. We take our break. We then go back into the glute drive hip thrust thing, and then we go do squats. So you can pair them back and forth, but you want the isolative smaller movement to be first. So that way you feel that targeted muscle before you go into the bigger movement. You can give this concept a try and it'll help create more complexity within your training, more effectiveness towards the actual targets and changes you want to make, but without having to actually learn any more movements or need any more equipment. And you can actually get better results before you even really know the technique of the bigger movements very well. So this is a great way to make what you're doing more effective as you continue to learn how to be more effective in the movements. So it's a really cool trick. It's a great, great way to get more of the intended result that you want from the work that you're doing. Cool. So I thought this would be fun. I just thought it would be a neat kind of thing to throw out there. If you have any questions, like if you're saying like, oh, I want to work on X, that's my target, but I don't know how to actually properly implement pre-exhaust for that goal, just email us. My email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. Tell me that, and then I'll make a podcast for you, and then we all can learn from it. Sound good? So if you have any specific questions about implementing pre-exhaust, email me at brutalirongym@gmail.com, and I'll happily answer that question. And if it's a good question and kind of makes a good podcast for people, I'll make the podcast. We all can learn from it. I appreciate you listening to today's podcast. I hope that this kind of sparks some creative thinking, and I hope you give it a try. It is going to help your training be more effective, and it'll just make you happier. Get more from the work you're already doing, right? Cool. Well, if you like today's podcast, please share it. The more we share the podcast, the more people we can help. That's the main goal of this. That's the whole purpose why I'm doing this, is I just want to help reach as many people as I can, and a podcast is a pretty cool way to do that. It's a really cool way to help hundreds of people a day. And it just feels good. So thank you for helping me feel good. I appreciate you. Thank you to the patrons of the podcast, people who financially support the podcast through the Podbean platform and through the podcast donation link accessible on our Instagram homepage. The podcast is actually well over $1,000 a year, so I appreciate the financial help. It really is only due to the financial help that I can afford to do this every day due to the time commitment and financial commitment. So I really sincerely appreciate the financial help. Thank you, everyone, very, very, very much. Also, if you like the information we share in the podcast, you can find more from us on our social media channels on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube under the name Brutal Iron Gym. If you have any questions, feedback, suggestions, anything that you want to know, let us know in our email, brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.